Good afternoon. Welcome in. WEEI Afternoons. Christian Arcan, Andy Hart. We are live at Gillette Stadium here on a Patriots Monday. Nice to have you with us here today. And it is a Patriots Monday, reacting to a brutal loss in San Francisco. One that most people predicted.
Who wouldn't have predicted that?
I don't know.
Idiot would have not predicted that game to play out exactly the way it did?
I have no idea. But we played Red Sox there for you because it's their end of the season press conference, which is beginning right now. We'll carry it for you right here.
And that's exactly what we intend to do this offseason.
Greg, it's hard to, it's hard to call this season a success, but in terms of your framework and the way you view this organization progressing over the next 5-10 years, how important was this first season in your eyes?
Yeah, so, you know, this is the time of year where we reflect on, you know, kind of where the organization is and where it's going. And I think as we think about where we are, the bottom line, as Sam just said, is, we didn't reach our goal. Our goal every year should be to contend for a division title, to poise ourselves for a deep playoff run. With that as the standard here, we fell short. There's no dancing around that. We need to be better. And that is not to say that there weren't things that should be reason for optimism, things that are really encouraging and exciting. We can point to the emergence of a number of position players that look to be cornerstones of, the next great run here. We can look to the emergence of three homegrown starters who, you know, each made 30-plus starts and reached innings totals that they hadn't seen before. But at the end of the day, I think our fans have the expectation that we're going to compete for World Series championships. We share that expectation with them, and we fell short this year.
What do you think you need to do?
Yeah, so I think there are a number of things that we've already started to do, behind the scenes in terms of building out, a front office that we believe is modern and positions us to make great decisions as it relates to player acquisitions and player development. Some shifts in philosophy that we think will, help build a pitching talent development pipeline that will feed our big league team. But I think the reality here, right, is that, we shouldn't have to look behind the scenes to determine progress or success. That should be readily demonstrated by the product that we put on the field at Fenway every day. And so we need to improve our defense, right? We can point to a defense that was, kind of bottom of the league, especially our infield defense. We had the second most blown saves in the league. So shoring up our bullpen. Obviously our lineup is pretty imbalanced in terms of being left-handed heavy, figuring out how to balance that out, how to take advantage of, the short left field wall. We saw the effect of a guy like Tyler and 30 plus home runs, as a right-handed power hitter in the middle of the lineup. So I think the combination of, improving starting pitching depth, rebuilding the bullpen, we have some notable losses there, shoring up the defense and balancing out the lineup.
Reducing payroll and kind of cutting back in some areas. Can you say that you'll be willing to spend more this upcoming year and this winter, and where things stand
as well? Yes. Look, it's been a hallmark of this organization, 23 years, that we've been willing to invest into Major League payroll and into all aspects of the baseball operation. It's also been a hallmark that we don't talk publicly about what we plan to do with our payroll, not because we're trying to hide anything from the media or the fans. We just don't like to talk publicly about our payroll plans because we see it as a competitive advantage in the American League East to not tip our hands to our competitors. That said, I can assure you that the feeling is that our fans have been through a lot. They've been patient, and it's time to get back where we belong. We thought we had a good shot at getting there this year, but it's time to get back and go for that division title, play baseball in the postseason. That's why we're here.
Thank you. That's literally why the three of us are here. There's nothing like October baseball, and that's our responsibility and our obligation to the best fans in baseball. We fell short of that this year, but we are going to work tirelessly to get us back where we belong in the American League East. That's our commitment, to do everything we can. And talk is cheap right now, words are hollow, but that's what we're gonna work on this offseason.
Sam, as you say, to do everything you can, do you have an expectation or a hope that the payroll will be higher than it was this year?
I don't know where the payroll is going to land. I know that we're going to be focused on win totals and getting into that postseason. You can't mess around in 83, 84, or 85 wins. That's not where you want to be. You want to win the division, get in, be in a position where you're sitting in a bye position and lining up who's going to be starting game one of the next series. That's where we want to be.
And speaking of the fans, it's been 3 years since you made the playoffs. Where will ticket prices be next year?
So ticket prices now, Pete, are set throughout the course of the year. And it's dynamic pricing. So ticket prices go up during the year, they go down, and they change based upon demand. So I can't tell you overall where ticket prices will be for 2025. I can tell you that if you looked where we were in 2023 to 2024, now that the 24 season is over, on average, overall, the ticket price increase was 1.7% for this year, for 2024. I can't tell you where we're going to be for 2025 until after the season, because prices change throughout the course of the year.
So you set certain levels for certain?
We do, yes. We set certain levels for some portion of our tickets that are season tickets. Some categories there will stay flat. Some will go up. And we'll see where that average number ends up. But I can tell you, as a season ticket holder, on average, you're getting about 15 to 20% off of what an individual game buyer purchases.
What's the status of the Cozy's
now? Yeah, the kind of evaluation process is ongoing. Alex and I are beginning those conversations, and we'll continue to have them. So nothing to announce right now outside of, we feel like in the same way that in the office or on the field, we need to do everything we possibly can to position ourselves to be the best team that we can. We'll do the same thing for our staff and announce anything when it is appropriate.
Alex, I'm curious. Each of your seasons in Boston has come with its own unique challenges. This season is even more unique. It felt like at the All-Star break, you were playoff contenders, and all of a sudden that started to dissipate. What have you learned as a coach and as a manager from this season in particular?
What I learned in 2019, every season is different, right? We were great in 18. We were okay in 19. 21 was awesome, right? And the last few years have been a struggle, right? And I learned a lot, just dealing with a young roster, the player developing thing doesn't stop in AAA. We can do it here, and I think as a group, from top to bottom, we did an outstanding job helping these kids to be better, and you saw the results. Obviously, we fell short, right? But at the end, you start looking at it piece by piece, right? And there's a lot of success stories. Others not so great, but we learned from those ones for that one, and we should be better in the offseason attacking those things.
And forgive me if you guys have addressed this before, but the status on Kenley Jansen, unrestricted free agent, do we know any of why he left the team, or is there any more that you can give us?
Yeah, I talked about it yesterday. Yeah, well, I had a conversation with Kenley as soon as we were done. I told him, he was free to go, go home, and it was a manager's decision.
Sam, when you look back and reflect, do you feel like ownership did enough for this team on the field over the last year? Committed enough?
No. We're not there. That's on us. I mean, you can phrase it any way you want, but when you fall short of your expectations, you can always do more. And we feel that obligation and that responsibility each and every year. There was a feeling this year, particularly yesterday in the ballpark, it was like, we don't want this to end. This has been, in a lot of ways, a season where sort of what could have been. And so we need to do more. We need to be better in every aspect within our ownership group, within the front office. And we're not here to be having press conferences on September 30th or October 1st. We're here to be talking about postseason play, and that's where we got to get back to.
A year ago at this time, we were told it was going to be a full throttle offseason. That didn't happen. Why should we believe you now? Why should fans believe you now when you sort of say the same thing?
Look, I think our job is to walk the walk and do all the right things from a baseball perspective that position us to be good for the long term. We fell short, and so we'll have to let our actions speak louder than our words. And that's always true. That's always been true. Things have worked out pretty well here when we've had success on the field, and we feel that burning urgency to get back to postseason play.
Can you say FSG plans on betting on the Celtics?
yeah, I don't see it to be appropriate to talk about the Celtics today, other than to say congrats on another world championship. But that's not on our radar right now.
Go ahead.
Sí, me llamo Sam.
No, un año de altas y bajas, pero creo que estamos en una muy buena posición entrando a lo que es el off-season para trabajar de la manera correcta, para tener un producto de calidad en el terreno de juego. 81 juegos ganados no es suficiente, y no es suficiente para entrar a octubre, y aquí la meta no es entrar a octubre nada más, es ganar la división y obviamente ganar la Serie Mundial. Muchas historias buenas, como dije antes, muchas cosas positivas, de las negativas aprendemos, estamos destacando la temporada muerta de la manera correcta. Hay muchos planes ya corriendo, obviamente seguirle el paso de los muchachos, seguir ayudándolos y estar listo para cuando lleguemos en febrero a Fort Myers, darle ese paso adelante y ganar la división.
Could you talk about I think I heard you mention the depth of pitching, the rotation. What about the high-end part of that? Do you feel you have the guys here? Is that part of maybe acquiring someone? Where do you sit there?
Yeah, I think we are very open to improving our rotation and our bullpen through a number of paths. We intend to be aggressive in exploring all of those, to act decisively when opportunities present themselves. You know, I think we would benefit from both. You know, I'm sure at some point there will be a question about, you know, potentially the reasons for struggles in the second half. And I do think overall organizational depth is something that we can point to as an area that needs to be strengthened, so that you know, in the second half, as inevitably guys get hurt or performance regresses, you know, we have capable players who can step in and make that transition seamlessly. And at the same time, everyone, you know, every team in baseball is well served by having someone at the front of the rotation that can win, you know, win a game when the team needs it, can win a playoff game. I think, fortunately, we saw a number of guys in the rotation this year take a step forward. I don't want to devalue the job that guys like Tanner and Brian and you know, and Cutter and others did. But at the same time, we need to get better, and we need to be open to any opportunity to do that.
Yeah. Frank, you talked about Dallas and New York. That would seem to indicate you might make some trades. Is there anybody on the roster that you wouldn't consider trading?
You know, I think at this point, everything has to be on the table. You know, I think to position ourselves otherwise could potentially, you know, eliminate a possibility. Now, the reality is oftentimes values don't match up where it makes sense to, you know, trade someone that we believe is going to be a superstar here for a really long time. But I think to, you know, to approach a conversation and take people off the table just doesn't make sense given our need to improve the product on the field.
Sam, you said something that was interesting to me. You said yesterday it felt like you didn't want to tank. And for my generation of Red Sox fans, being brought up through 04, 7, 13, it did kind of feel like this was the closing of a chapter. From the people around me, I guess the question that we have in our generation is, how do you develop the next generation of Red Sox fans? How do you give them something to believe in and to hope in when they haven't seen 04, they haven't seen 07?
Yeah, It's a great question. One of the most important things we do is provide accessibility to Fenway Park for young people. Probably everybody in this room fell in love with baseball because of our ability to either go to a major league park or a minor league park. So accessibility to Fenway Park is massively important to us, and we think about it each and every day. And then you get to come in and you experience the magic of this place, and you also experience the core group that we have, players like Jaron Duran and Willie Abreu, and seeing Trevor Story come back and Rafi night in and night out. The building blocks of that next great Red Sox team we hope are there and in place. And we also, I would tell that next generation that we have the right group in leadership in our baseball operation. We've got Brez and AC committed here for the long term, and that's a really good thing for Red Sox fans.
Sam, even when you were spending more freely and getting better results on the field, John made it quite well known that he did not, with few exceptions, believe in investing in free agent starting pitchers in their 30s because of the risk involved. Given that, and the fact that most free agents are 30 or close to it, is it more likely that Craig's directive is to address that need for an ace through a trade?
I think it's more likely that every avenue will be explored, and this ownership group has taken a lot of heat, probably deservedly so, because we haven't been where we need to be the last couple of years. I can tell you this ownership group feels urgency and a hunger to explore every avenue, as Brez said, to improve and build upon this team to get back into the postseason.
If I can just jump in.
All right, there you go. That is a portion of the exit interview or the press conference at the end of the season here for the Boston Red Sox. Sam Kennedy, Craig Breslow, and Alex Cora answering questions from the media there. We'll get into some of that, but we will also kick off our Patriots Monday, as we have a lot to react to from yesterday. A brutal, brutal loss for the Patriots in San Francisco. We'll get to all of that. First, here's Stiz with what's trending. All right, welcome in. It's Patriots Monday here, WEEI Afternoons. Christian Arcan, Andy Hart, live from Gillette Stadium. A little cold here at Gillette Stadium today. Our young Brian got held up at security. They didn't even want us to come in here and talk about this game today.
Well, they shouldn't, because
they shouldn't.
It was a hideous football game.
It was an ugly, ugly game. The Patriots get smoked by the San Francisco 49ers, just like everybody thought they would. I mean, really, everybody thought so. I don't know anybody who thought otherwise. I will defend my pick in a little bit here, but let's go ahead and start off with, exactly what went wrong here. There was a time and a point in the game where it seemed like there was some things going well. It wasn't completely dog crap the entire time. The offense did move the ball a little bit. Even on that first drive, they picked up a couple of first downs. There were times where the defense seemed to be playing better than others. But all in all, it just seemed like another sloppy, unfocused, talentless kind of bleep show is really what it looked like. I mean, there's a lot of guys over on that 49ers team, Andy, and we talked about this. If you were drafting this game, it would be almost all 49ers.
Yep.
And that really, I think, was on display.
So to tie our first segment, Red Sox postmortem dump press conference, and this segment together, there's some similarities in these teams, because I thought all year there was a question of, like, what do you know exactly what you're going to get from the Red Sox in what area? Like, there were ups and downs, starting pitching great, starting pitching good enough, starting pitching not great, bullpen not great, like, and your tent poles, what you're going to build your team on. And I would ask the same question through four games, which we're still calling a quarter of the season. I heard Devon Godshaw call it the quarter pole of the season, and I'm going to do so even though it's still a 17-game season. I don't know what this team is really good at, because the defense has not lived up to its reputation. There's been flashes. A couple red zone stops is what prevented this from being really ugly yesterday.
Yes.
Really, really ugly. But then I thought, when they could have used a stop that might have changed this game, after halftime, you get the fumble, you get the touchdown, you cut it to 20-10 early in the third quarter, you got a ball game. Like, I still thought the 49ers played the game on their terms and were controlling everything, but you're only down 10 with two quarters of football to play. Well, you're only down 10 for like 2 minutes because your defense couldn't hold them. They immediately go down and it's 27-10, and that is stick a fork in them, they're done, ball game over. And offensively, we knew there were going to be struggles. But I think you'd hoped that, okay, you're going to run the ball. Well, that guy drops the ball a lot. He yeah. gives it to the other team. My whole theory, if we're taking our apology laps here a little bit, my whole theory that guys will go for the football on Ramondre because he's got a target on his back and that'll allow him to break arm tackles.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he gave them the ball again.
Sure did.
So that kind of fell on its face. And I don't know what is good about this football team.
You were right, they targeted him. I mean, you had that part
yeah,
right.
Yeah, really. No, but I thought it would be opportunities.
That he would be not fumbling anymore. But, yeah, I mean, that's a big problem. That's a major problem.
And when you're not good on either side of the ball, I know everybody yeah. wants to say that special teams is a third of the game. It kind of really isn't because their special teams was good. You know, Gerard Mayo said it. Special teams had a day. The punter was good. The yep. kicker was good. Brendan Schooler was all over the field. He looks like he's a developing Matthew Slater, core special teamer guy that continues to get better. But offensively and defensively, you just didn't measure up.
No, and if the only thing you're excelling in is special teams, and by special teams like long field goals,
yeah.
the occasional really nice punt, a turnover forced by a tackle on a punt return,
you can't
or something
win.
Along those lines, it's nice to see that. And I know that in the old days with Belichick, it was like, wow, even the special teams, look at them elevating their game, like when something like that would happen. And it would be this big testament to Belichick and how great he was. If that's all you have,
right?
If that's all you have, that's a testament to how poor your roster
right.
is.
Special teams are supposed to be the toppings on a good bowl of ice cream.
Right.
If you just have the toppings, are you excited? Oh, sweet. A bowl full of chocolate syrup with a little whipped cream on top and
I mean,
nuts.
That does sound okay, but yes, I know what you mean.
I need the ice cream. I need the substantive base for it to be built upon. Maybe two different flavors. They don't have any flavors of ice cream right now. They just have toppings, and the toppings aren't going to win anything for
I
you.
Thought that the Niners would be tight. I thought they'd come out and play the game tight, and I think there were at some points in the game where they did. I didn't think they looked like 100% their the high operating thing. I called Brock Purdy everything but a man of God over the past week. I mean, really. I do not think he's very good.
Still?
He tore him up last
night. Oh, okay.
I mean, that was an absolute masterclass in how to, number one, navigate and negotiate the pocket. He had a bunch of great throws. He was awesome. I don't know how much more of an L I could possibly take on all the things I said about Brock Purdy. He was tremendous in that game. I still think that there are times where he looks like he's went way over his head. But last night was certainly not one of those games. And I don't know if it necessarily could have been, but that defense could have probably made his life a little tougher. There was one sack where he ran around for about 10 seconds.
Yep.
He was just running around. Da-da, anybody over here? Anybody over there? No one's around. He's eating a sandwich. He's like having a beer. No one even came close to him. And then finally, eventually, after like 11 seconds, someone comes in and sacks him.
Which is embarrassing because he's not Lamar Jackson.
No.
He's not Michael Vick. He's not whoever you think is the most athletic, crazy, moving around kind of guy. Like, he's Brock Purdy. He's fine. You gave him the edge, and we'll get into that later. Like,
right. The one thing you swore not to do.
Well, a couple things.
No fumbles and no letting the quarterback escape the pocket. Both of those things happened immediately.
Both were problems.
In this game.
And that's a problem. We talked about it on Friday. Gerard Mayo is in the crosshairs.
Yep.
And I know some people, like I put out a poll for blame pie on the Patriots offense, but Gerard Mayo is the head coach of the football team. The reality is it falls on your shoulders. And he says it. I give him credit. Blame me. I get to fix that. That starts with me. He does a lot of those Belichickian phrases.
Yep.
But the reality is he doesn't have any resume and cachet to fall back on. He's now a 1-3 football coach in his first year and a team that's trending in the wrong direction. If we're going to do any silver lining talk, because I like to be objective, it's not all crap. It's not all pylon day. I didn't think they quit. I thought they had energy basically for four quarters.
I'd agree with that.
This was just a game where
I don't know how much value I place in it, but I do agree with that.
Then we can get into discussions about roster and talent
right.
and scheme. But this wasn't a they didn't want to try, they didn't want to win, they didn't play four quarters. I thought they wanted to play, they wanted to win. They're just not a very good football team right now, especially, I mean, the offensive line. It wasn't as bad as I think we all expected it to be. I talked to you for the pregame show. And I didn't think the line was as bad as expected it to be, especially if you had told me David Andrews is going to leave.
Right.
And we're going to have to put Nick Leverett in. And I'm not saying the line was good, but it wasn't the absolute train wreck, I guess, that it could have been if I had known that Nick Leverett was going to be in there.
I'd agree with you there, and I would also go a step further and say that, to me, made that Brissett's worst game. I think that was his worst game so far this year. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's not his worst game ever in his career, but that was his worst game as a Patriot so far in 2024. He had time on a lot of those throws.
Yep.
He had time on the interception, on the pick six. He had time to look around the field. He had two guys open, and he throws it right to Fred Warner. He talked about it already. We'll ask him about it. 4:30, by the way. 4:30-ish.
Ooh.
Not sure if we're getting him in studio or on the phone. This was just handed to me by Maddie the Marine back there. But, yeah, I'm not sure.
I'm
exactly.
Hearing in studio.
In studio.
In studio.
Terrific. All right, good.
I have good sources, I hope.
I hope so.
Otherwise,
too.
I will out my source, and I'm not lying.
4:30. We'll talk to Brissett. We'll talk to him right here. I'm not sure exactly what's going to be happening with Jonathan Jones, who we'll also slated to talk to today. I don't think we have a time on him yet, but we will ask him what went wrong as well. He was right there for that big chunk play you just mentioned. After the Patriots get a break, you know, that was a break on that fumble, on that muff kickoff or the muff punt, whatever it was, and then the touchdown there to Austin Hooper, followed by a huge play with Deebo Samuel, who didn't look too banged up to me. I mean,
nope.
I was told that him and not just him, but him and George Kittle were both dealing with these real serious injuries and weren't going to be at 100%, and both of them absolutely ate you up. I mean, that Kittle touchdown, that thing was ridiculous. That was Gronkowski and Gonzalez rolled into one.
Both of those, the two deep balls and the Kittle touchdown, those were kind of bully ball.
Yeah.
Like, we're the eighth graders, you're the sixth graders. You don't belong on this field, but we need a few more people to play, so we'll let you play. But there was no F's given by the San Francisco 49ers. They thought they were better. And I will say, early on, Deebo took a big hit from Peppers.
Yep.
And no worse for the wear, right? Like, Peppers does that to Jalen Hurts last year, it's a fumble. Peppers does that to certain people, maybe it affects the game. Deebo is just like, okay, we're going to keep doing what we're doing. And I thought there was a little, even on the defensive side of the ball, Bosa didn't dominate the day, but he played bully ball right up until the end.
Yeah.
He kind of embarrassed, the hell's his name, DeMontre Jacobs. Should I learn his name? This sounds disrespectful, but should I take the time to learn his name? Because it's week five now, and they've had four different players so far play left tackle. Should I bother learning his name, or is he going to be rotated right out?
I don't know, host two of WEEI Afternoon
Show. Oh, that's hurtful.
But, hey, host one is not sure either. So, I mean, I'll remember his name. Because there's two, they have two guys they picked up off the practice squad, off waivers, who are both humongous. This guy, DeMontre Jacobs, who's 6'6", 3-something. And then this other guy, Caleb Jones, who they got coming in next, 6'9", 370.
You
and
like
he's
him.
The one, I mean, listen.
You like yourself a big man.
A big left tackle, I think, is got to be worth something, although it really wasn't worth much there against Bosa. He kept screaming around the side there. They had the backup DT in there. He's pushing guys around. It was another brutal day for the offensive line, but this is what you come to expect now. I mean, this is if they hold up at all, and they did a few times. There was a few times where Brissett had a reasonably clean pocket, or at least an extra second normally than he usually does. I wonder if he's seeing ghosts out there. I really do.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I think that there comes a point where you feel that you hear those footsteps, whether they're coming or not. And after a month of this, I mean, what do you expect?
Have you seen his face after every hit, the grimace that he makes?
Yeah.
And the, like, there was that extended one where he went down on 1D. He was almost Tebowing for a while down there, then finally get off the field. The guy is getting the snot kicked out of him. And I'm sorry. Have you ever, like, the kids play the games where they hit each other and then they see if they flinch? And he's flinching.
Yeah.
He should flinch. You know why he's flinching? Because he keeps getting hit. He's under pressure 50% of the time. He drops back. So it's a coin flip as to whether he's going to get knocked on his ass. And something in his midsection is hurting. He's probably going to tell us, feel good. I always get up. Like, he's a good soldier, tough guy, the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Something in here is not right. He has an upper body injury in the National Hockey Association League, whatever the hell it is.
National League. Hockey League.
I was going to say association.
Nah, that's okay.
It's not the NBA. So, yeah, he should be hearing footsteps because they're actually coming most of the time. So
yep.
They're not ghosts. There's a couple times, but I'd be looking. The funny thing is, you're right. He actually had the ball in his hand for a while yesterday.
He held the ball too long on at least four or five plays.
But that's also part of it. Sometimes, like, you're being too perfect. Or we've talked about it. Why is he playing? To avoid mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're trying to avoid mistakes, don't you hold the ball longer? Because you're not taking chances. Now, ironically, he had a strip sack late. He had the interception. He didn't avoid the mistakes yesterday against a good defense. But when you're trying to avoid mistakes, I think you hold the ball longer.
Yeah. Without the special teams turnover, the Patriots would have had 6 points on two very long field goals.
Oh, yeah.
That sort of sums it up, doesn't it? Like, we're talking about almost another shutout. Like, this is the type of output that you look at and you think, okay, even if you do bring in Drake May, like, I've always been about bringing in Drake May, but I watch a game like that and I just think, man, this team's not going to be good no matter who's out there. That's how I feel. That's how I felt much later in the year last year. But when they kept yo-yoing back and forth from Mac Jones to Bailey Zappe and neither one of them could lead a scoring drive, it's like, well, you know,
I don't know if you could bring in Josh Allen and turn anything with this team. This doesn't seem functional. It seems like you have a dysfunctional offense that can't really do anything. And, I mean, if you look at it, bottom fives all around. You have a bottom five quarterback, a bottom five O-line. You have a bottom five wide receiver group. I'm putting Ramondre Stevenson on the bottom five, too, by the way. No other running back has more than two fumbles. He's got four. I'm sorry, that's bottom five, whether you like it or not. And that's a major problem, by the way. All the problems with this offense, and he's your biggest liability right now, like, that's not an exaggeration. You can make that argument. And I don't know what you do about it. You have what you have. There's some guys out there on practice squads around the NFL. No one that really sets my toes a tapping here, but you can't have a guy fumbling every single game.
That's why everybody's like, if Belichick were here, he'd be benched. Can you bench him?
No.
You don't really have. I said all along I thought they
needed
a
veteran. Unless you want to call up Harris from the practice squad.
But I don't even like, they needed a veteran backup. And I know he's toast in Dallas. He's not even playing. But, like, you need an Ezekiel Elliott to turn to.
I was going
to
say, they missed Elliott last night.
Absolutely.
They've been missed him all year, really.
100%. Yeah. So, but real quick, I want you to verbally vote. You know I'm big on the verbal votes.
Okay. Yay or nay?
After 4 weeks, who/what do you blame most for the Patriots' offensive struggles? Is it quarterback Jacoby Brissett? Is it Alex Van Pelt, your offensive coordinator? Is it the offensive line play? Or is it Elliott Wolf's roster?
Elliott Wolf's roster.
Elliott Wolf's, Brian wants to vote as well. He also voted for Elliott Wolf's roster. That is leading the poll. We're about 600, 700 votes in an hour. 44% say Elliott Wolf's roster, followed closely by offensive line play at 42%.
Which is kind of the same answer.
Kind of the same.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
Alex Van Pelt at 8%, and only 6% of the respondents say Jacoby Brissett is most to blame for the Patriots' offensive struggles.
Let me just say, I think Jacoby Brissett has a big role to play in it.
Yeah, he's the quarterback.
The most to blame? No.
Well, I wouldn't
put him at the top. I'd say he's, he's definitely not helping you. And I thought there were certain points last night where he was actively hurting you. But he's not the biggest problem.
That's why I would agree that basically 86% are putting their focus in my poll on Elliott Wolf. Because Elliott Wolf is the guy who chose not to get a left tackle. He didn't go after Jonah Williams. He didn't trade up in the first round to get a starting caliber tackle. I think they had every intention of believing a starting caliber tackle was going to be available in the second round.
Yeah.
And then a run happened, and he wasn't. And you couldn't get one of those. And then they talked themselves and maybe us into, Caden Wallace can play left tackle, and Okorafor can play left tackle, and Scott Peters can teach him the strike principle or whatever it is, some Jean-Claude Van Damme movie that they freaking run on the offensive line. And it has blown up in... I would vote for that. Some combination of Elliott Wolf not getting a left tackle, because I think that's the fatal flaw. Now I think they should just go for the record. I'm just going to presume and assume that no team has ever started 17 different left tackles in a 17-game season.
I think you're right.
Go for it. See if you can make history somehow, some way. Just put different on when you're next, whatever your big 6'9", 390 guy is, give
Caleb
him a
Jones.
Shot.
Yep.
Laydon Robinson, you're a big athlete, even though you got your ass whooped in that game.
Yep.
You get a shot. It's like Oprah. You get a shot. You get a shot. Everybody plays left tackle.
And that probably wouldn't be any worse than the play you've got there so far. By the way, Caden Wallace was drafted one selection after Brandon Coleman. Who's Brandon Coleman, you may ask? The starting left tackle, a rookie, starting for the Washington Commanders right now. And they're looking pretty good.
Did he play left tackle in college? I'm going to guess he did.
I believe he did. Yes,
at Texas. That's my biggest critique.
He moved around the offensive line, but he did play left tackle.
Like,
yes.
Caden Wallace was a right tackle. Chukwuma Okorafor was a right tackle. You didn't hire it. I keep going back to it. It reminds me of Matt Patricia. You hired a coach, and you said good coaches are good coaches, right? And he can just reverse engineer an offense. I think you did the same thing. Oh, a good tackle is a good tackle. If you can play right tackle, you can play left tackle. No. You can't dodge a wrench and dodge a ball either.
Nope, no you can't. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We got room for you here on the phone lines if you'd like to react to that brutal, brutal game we all watched last night. We also want to point out the point in the game where you knew it was over. I think I have mine. And also we'll get to the league leaders and who's circling the drain. Jacoby Brissett's going to join us at 4:30 in studio. We'll also talk with Jonathan Jones today. A jam-packed Patriots Monday here for you on Boston Sports Original WEEI.
Oof. Ouch, babe.
I guess Bill Belichick's not shy about talking about the Patriots anymore. That was him on Pat McAfee just a few minutes ago, ripping the Patriots, ripping Gerard Mayo, saying he doesn't know what the plan. I'm sure he's got a plan. I don't know what it is, but I'm sure he's got one.
Bully.
If I was Bill Belichick, I wouldn't be crowing too much, because one thing I really thought about these last two games is it looked like last year. Those two games looked like the team last year. That's what you looked like. Bill, that's what your team was. And a lot of these guys are your guys who they re-signed, who they brought back, and who you couldn't get really that much more out of. I will say this. The defense looked better last year.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. The defense last year with Bill running it looked better, and with Mayo running it too, I guess. This year, the defense looks just as bad as the offense. Everything looks bad. I'm surprised he led with the offense and not the defensive shortcomings, because I thought he'd latch onto that as something that was actually functional last year instead of the offense, which was his pick, Mac Jones, his backup, Bailey Zappi, and all these other people who just couldn't do anything. Even Cam Newton, you want to throw him in there too. Like, he didn't handle that all that well. They didn't gain a lot of yards or score a lot of points for about 3 years before he got fired. But he is talking about the Patriots, at least.
So I'm torn on this because I have told you before I love when Bill is honest and vindictive and a jackass, and that's what he's being there.
Yes.
He's being a bully because I didn't hear any of this in week one. He was not saying a word in week one, and now they've lost three in a row. They've played two hideous games in a row on the road, sort of played embarrassing football on certain levels, and now he's, you know, popping off from the chest, mocking his guy's plan. Well, Bill, your plans in the past have been pretty piss poor, too. So let's not pretend you haven't had. I mean, the measuring stick for the worst plan in the history of the New England Patriots is Matt Patricia.
Yep.
We start from there. So we know that Drake May plan will not be worse than the Matt Patricia plan, Bill. So you're not going to get unseated as the worst plan in the history of the franchise. But I also love that he's that's honest Bill. That's how Bill would look at the even if he didn't have the connection to the Patriots or Mayo or any of this, you know, an axe to grind against Robert, he would look at this from afar and he would hear the word plan like we have.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm surprised he didn't throw a C word in there, a collaboration or something.
C word?
Collaboration, that's C word.
That's C word. You could just say collaboration.
Because the Bill, because it's funny, I was just making a joke. I'm trying to have a little light humor.
All right,
here.
All right, jeez. Go on then, jeez.
But I'm surprised he didn't throw some of the collaboration or some other words, silos, in there, because he hears these from afar. Don't tell him. He knows everything that's being said about him, about the new regime, and all of that. And I enjoy him taking shots from afar. I'm not going to lie. That's the Bill I love. It's not very professional, and I bet Gerard Mayo isn't in love with it. His mentor, who he begged to join his staff a few years ago, and then Robert said, hey, I'm glad you brought him in. He's your replacement eventually.
And I'm deciding right now while we're celebrating the World Series. How about a Super Bowl victory?
But it's also low-hanging
right
fruit.
Here and there,
right, it's low-hanging fruit right now. Like, you know, are you going to still be analyzing if Drake May plays against the Jags in London and they win by 20? Are you still going to be on your high horse? So we can keep an eye on it and be entertained by it from afar. I'm just glad he's talking about the Patriots because we all want it.
Yeah, I wanted him to start doing it too. I would just, you know, maybe caution. Hey, these are all things that can be very easily turned around back on you.
Wait, what, they can?
Absolutely, all they can. All the things he just said in that clip, yes.
The plan?
Yeah.
No, the plan's not on him.
The plan, well, the plan with the players, I think.
The offensive line stinks. Oh, all those issues have a ties to
Because what was
him.
His plan with all these same players, not the same quarterback,
No, but he's referencing the plan with the quarterback.
Yeah.
And his plan with the quarterback was what?
To start him right away and ruin him in year two.
Exactly.
That's what he
I would take that right now, wouldn't you?
I would take the first year.
Entertain
sure.
me in year one, and then we'll figure out year two when we get there. If we start to try to break him, whatever. So I think that's where Bill is mocking the plan, because I'm surprised he didn't throw in some sort of, like, you know, we had Mac Jones as a rookie, a first-round pick, and, you know, we went to the playoffs, and I'm surprised he didn't have a throwaway line like that.
Yeah, certainly could have if he wanted to. When did you know the game was over yesterday?
As I mentioned earlier, when the defense couldn't stop them after the touchdown to start, because you got a gift.
Yep.
And I'm thinking the two red zone stops, it felt like you were getting absolutely curb stomped at halftime. But a few minutes later, you're down 20-10, and it's like, okay, maybe they got a shot, because now you're in, I can run the ball, I can do my offense, which is very limited, but I'm not in, you know, this huge multi-score deficit. And then immediately, your boy, Purdy, who you think stinks, goes deep, hits a big play, and they're in the end. And then the way they scored, too, I didn't think they gave up as a team. But that Josh Uche touchdown allowed to Mason was
he overshoot that. Yeah.
What are we doing here?
And that was rough.
We will tie that into a quote that was shared on the Jones and Keefe show later. I think that may tie into that touchdown run. But that touchdown run, I said, okay, it's over. Post-game show. Fitzy, what time are we starting?
The first time I thought, okay, this is it. This is done was the fumble, was when Stevenson fumbled on the second drive, because that was such a point of emphasis, and they had 10 freaking days. 10 days of fumble drills, 10 days of protect the ball, 10 days of whatever the hell they do to help somebody stop fumbling, and it happened almost immediately. Like, they had that one drive where they had picked up a couple of first downs and had to punt it away, field goal, first handoff on the second drive. And he coughs it up, and I just said, that was the first time I said, bleep this. Like, I'm probably going to be wrong here in my big prediction. Then you have a pick six after that. that seemed like a good time to sort of call it. And then you get all the way down the field. You finally make some progress. You're picking up first downs. You're moving the ball. You go 50 yards on 11 plays. Fourth down, and you run it right up the middle there with Ramondre Stevenson.
Can we get into
I wanted to kick a field goal there. You take points. You're not a team that can afford to pass on points ever.
In one sense, I give this team credit because they started practicing the draw the defense off sides plays earlier and more often than I've ever seen a team do it in training camp. Wow. And I'm being serious.
And what a great job they did.
I've been to 20-whatever training camps. I don't even remember seeing it barely at all, never mind as early and often as they started working on it. It felt like the offense wasn't even installed yet, and they were like, you know what we need to work on? Drawing the defense off sides plays. And they would do it, and they've used it a ton, and I hate it.
They got one free play last week, right?
Because you know who should get free plays, in my opinion? Aaron Rodgers. Tom Brady's like, you know who shouldn't?
Rodgers gets them all the time. We're used to
it. Well, now he's fighting with his coach about it.
That was yelling at him, yeah.
But you know who shouldn't? A team like this. A team that fancies themselves running game and defense. A team that fancies themselves, we're going to put Caden Wallace as an extra tight end. We're going to line up and we're just going to... I don't want you tricking a team to jump off sides. That's not how you win. You told me you were going to be a running football team. That team, with its 225-pound running back, should line up and run the ball down your throat. You also, by the way, have a huge quarterback.
Yeah.
If you wanted to do QB sneaks and things of that nature. And your first attempt at everything is to like, well, let's do the snap thing. Like, I think that is the lamest thing in all of sports, trying to steal that. Because it says something about you. You don't think you can get the yard.
Right.
If you thought you could get the damn yard, you'd get the yard.
Yeah.
You know, it's the opposite of the Eagles. For their stretch there with the tush push, it was unstoppable.
Yeah.
They almost wanted fourth and one because they're like, ooh, we get to do this again. We're going to embarrass you. We're going to take away your manhood. This team is supposed to be built to run the football. And when they get in those situations, the first thing they think of is, let's see if we can do the old bark thing, and you come here, and we're going to motion, and we're going to do all this to get you to jump off sides against a good – it's stupid and it's infuriating.
Yeah, it is, and it didn't lead to much there, obviously.
No!
And they didn't take the points. They tried to go for it on fourth down, got stuffed up the middle, and had a couple other weird fourth downs later in the game, which we will get to. Jacoby Brissett, under 170 yards, a touchdown, and an interception. His QB rating was in the 20s. By contrast, Brock Purdy's was in the 60s. Another tough game for him, and another post game that had calls for Drake May and discussions about that with Gerard Mayo getting louder and louder and louder. We will get to some of that and analyze it all with you right after this.